Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner at 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. And on this show, I get the opportunity to interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are shaping and have shaped and are really looking to change and do the next thing in the business of sports. Today, my guest is Joe Watson. I'm really excited about this. He's a two-time Stanley Cup champion with the Philadelphia Flyers and author of the new book, Thundermouth, Memoirs of a Broad Street Bully and NFL Lifer. His book is an immersive dive into the exhilarating world of the NHL. It's a front row seat to the highs and lows, the fierce rivalries, and the unmatched camaraderie that defines the whole sport of hockey. Joe, welcome to our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Boy, Wayne, thank you very much for that fine introduction. My gosh, I've never been introduced that way before. That's wonderful. But I'm really looking forward to this, Wayne, and there's so many stories that I've been fortunate to play in a team that was very successful, and especially in Philadelphia. And people haven't forgotten where they were and when what they were doing when the Flyers won their first cup. And then, of course, the Broad Street Bully image that we created over the years. The Bullies are the most iconic team I think they've ever had in Philadelphia. People can remember where they were, Wayne, 50 years ago when the Flyers won. And then the Broad Street Bullies, when the Bullies beat the Russians and so on and so forth. So I must say, it's a wonderful area to live in. I never thought I would say this in 1967 when I came here, but here I am 56, 57 years later, and it's a beautiful area.
It's amazing to have you in the Philly area all these years. And, you know, I go back to, you know, even in the title of your book, you talk about the Broad Street Bullies. Talk about the Broad Street Bullies and who are some of the bullies?
Oh, boy. Well, we have the biggest bully, all obvious, is Dave the Hammer Schultz. But the way the Bully started, Wayne, was in 1968. We played St. Louis, our first year in the league and their first year in the league. And we had them we played a very physical series against them. And they were bigger than us. And we got beaten seven games. And we were pretty well beat up physically. And Mr. Snyder vowed this would never happen to a Flyer team again. So he instructed his general manager and his scouts that he wanted a big physical team that guys could play hockey at the same time, take care of situations when they got out of hand on the ice. And I'm referring to, Dave the Hammer Schultz and Bob Machine Gun Kelly. And he had the quickest fist on the team, Bob Kelly did. And then we traded for a guy named Andre DuPont. And when we had Ed Van Impe and Barry Ashby, they were big physical defensemen. But Mr. Snyder said this will never happen. It never did happen again to the Broad Street Bullies or the Flyers team themselves, because, you know, the Bullies really came into their prominence in 1970. In 1972, there was a guy named Jack Chevalier. He was a reporter for the Bulletin. And we had a, I don't know, I can't recall who we were playing, but it was a very physical game. And he coined the phrase, the Broad Street Bullies, the next day in the Daily News, it was the Bulletin. And that stuck with us. And that name was very intimidating to the opposing teams that used to come into our building. Cause I knew some other players and other teams and they knew they were going to war when they came into our building. And I remember talking to some of the Islanders. They would be rambling down 95, come over the old the Walt Whitman Bridge, and they looked off in the distance to the left-hand side. They'd see the spectrum. The whole bus would get quiet because they knew they were going to war. And so many other teams told me the same thing, because it was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, Wayne. And it's just like me having $100 in my pocket. You have $100 in your pocket. I'm trying to extract that money out of your pocket like you're trying to do to me, and may the best man win. And that's the way we looked at it.
Well, you mentioned in this Mr. Snyder, and of course you're referring to Ed Snyder, the owner of the and founder and owner of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Correct.
And really an incredible sports business person. Probably one of the first, right, who really built his fortune in the business of sports instead of coming to the world of sports and then, you know, doing it for fun.
You know, Wayne, I don't know if you remember 1968. Remember the Spectrum? The roof, we lost the roof on the Spectrum. And we were like vagabonds. We had our last 22 games on the road that year. And, of course, we don't have any home games. You know, there's no revenue coming in. And Mr. Snyder said, I might have to move this team or sell this franchise if I don't get a fusion of money. So he goes to five different banks in the Philadelphia area. And the last bank he went to was Girard Trust. There was a guy named Bill Bear. Bill Bear was a big hockey guy. He was from, he went to Harvard. He played hockey at Harvard in the 50s. And he was a big fan. He had season tickets. And Ed went to visit him on a Wednesday night or Wednesday afternoon. Said that what he needed an infusion of $2 million. And if I didn't get an infusion, I'm probably going to have to move the team or sell the team. And next morning, he gets up at 9 o'clock in the morning. He goes to the bank at Thursday morning, and there's $2 million in his account, and the rest is history. I mean, he made himself into a billionaire through sports. And he was a very intelligent man, obviously. The city couldn't handle the payments or didn't have the money to take care of the build of Spectrum. So I think he bought a 99-year lease off the city. And, you know, he started, you know, bringing concerts in and shows and everything else. And he hired the proper people to run the facility. And the rest is history. It really is.
Well, one other thing that's it's really amazing is the Flyers alumni and the relationship that individuals like you have had and had with Mr. Snyder. Feels like he's still around. I mean, the aura of him is will never ever leave the Philadelphia Flyers. What was that like being part of that world? I mean, you're on the inner circle with him, with so many other alums, and how he treated everyone as being part of that whole that special Flyers family.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right in what you say about Mr. Snyder. You know, he realized in order to make an impact in this area, and hockey really wasn't very highly thought of, I don't think, when we first came here in 67. So he knew he had to make an impact somehow. And he, like I say earlier on, he instructed his coaches, general managers, and scouts to go out and get guys that could play hockey at the same time, take care of situations on the ice because of what happened to us the first year against St. Louis in the playoffs. But you know what? I'll never forget. After we win our second cup, we have a party at his place out in Radnor, and we're having a great time. And I'll never forget. He said to me, he says, you know, Joe, this is easy. I says, what do you mean? Well, we won two Stanley Cups in 8 years. Well, we haven't won since, Wayne. So it wasn't that easy. And of course, he's no longer around to know what's going on with the organization, but he created a great legacy for himself and very well respected by the people in the business world. And he's one of the few guys that made his money in sports and business and entertainment, where a lot of these people come in and buy these big facilities. They're already successful, but he made them successful. He made himself successful because of the nature of him and the person he is. You know, he just had so much success, and it was very, very difficult when he passed away. I remember visiting him out in California at his place about 3 weeks prior to passing on, and there Bob Clark, myself, and Bernie, and some of the staff from the Spectrum. We flew out in his plane to visit him, and he was all skin and bone when I saw him. So as we were leaving, Wayne, he called me over. He says, you know, Joe, I've known you 50 years, and we've worked together 50 years, and not many people can say that. They might have known a person 50 years, but never worked together. And I often think about those words that he said to me, I must say it'll always stick in my mind, the few words he said to me about that situation. And he was just a wonderful man. All he wanted to do, like I said, Wayne, all he wanted to do is win. There's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. Not at all. And, no. You know, I think one of the things that's I'd love to hear your thoughts on is, you know, being a two-time Stanley Cup champion, you know, someone that, you know, played at the highest of levels in the league. And you think about what's going on today in sports and how a lot of the top athletes are getting themselves involved in business, thinking about the business a little differently. I mean, do you ever spend some time with some of the current players and talk to them about how they're thinking about, you know, the business of sports today versus what it was back in the 60s, 70s?
You know what, Wayne, I know the players to say hi to them, the present Flyer players, and I don't know other athletes. I know a lot of the older athletes from the sport, other respective sports, but I don't know the young guys. And I can remember in 1966 when I broke in the National League with Boston with the great Bobby Orr, and there were 96 players in the league at the time. And if you take all 96 players' salaries, we never made $3.5 million amongst 96 players. And the highest paid player at the time was Gordie Howe. I think he was making $48,000 a year. And my first year in the National League, first full year in 1966, I was making $7,500. And I thought I was living high off the hog. This is a great life, by God. But, you know, I didn't make enough money to survive all summer. So I had to go work. And I did public work. I worked for the Public Works Department up in British Columbia there. And I flagged traffic through and I'll never forget a guy coming up to me, or he was in his vehicle, and he just said, "I heard your name on radio." This is on June 17th. I says, "Oh yeah, what'd you hear?" He says, "You got drafted by the Philadelphia Flyers." I says, "What?" I had no idea I was available at Boston, because the year before I'd beat some guys out for a job. And of course, you were only in those days when they had the draft in 67, you're only allowed to protect 10 players out of your whole organization. And I wasn't one of the 10 protected by Boston. So it was very upsetting to me. But Wayne, it was the best thing that ever happened to me coming to Philadelphia. It really was. And
that's amazing. That's amazing. And you mentioned earlier playing with Bobby Orr when you were with Boston.
Right.
And I understand that you still have a pretty close relationship with him.
Yeah, we do. In fact, he did the foreword for my book. And it was really neat. And now I got invited to go to Boston here to sell my book in Boston. I don't know when we're going to go up, but my wife and I will go up for a couple of days. But there's a gentleman called, and he said he wants me to come up and sell the books in Boston, because a lot of people are inquiring about it. I said, "Oh, okay." So that's what we're going to do. But he revolutionized the game of hockey as far as the defenseman plays. When I met him in 1965 in London, Ontario, we had training camp there with Boston, and he was about 140 pounds. I couldn't believe it. He was only 140 pounds. I couldn't believe he was a hockey player. And so anyway, we break camp. He goes back to the Oshawa Generals. That's where he played junior in. And he bought a rowing machine. And he rowed for 3 hours a day for about 6 months, 5 days a week. And he put on 55 pounds of muscle. And that just made him above everybody else in the game. I mean, he was only 18 years old and at the time, and he was just above everybody else. And he revolutionized defense as a defenseman playing the National Hockey League, or did. The thing about him, he was so strong in his forearms. You know, your position of your hands are a certain situation where you're stick handling. When you go to pass and shoot, well, he'd always have his hands in the passing area of a stick, and he was so strong in the forearms, he could let shots go that half the goalies would never see the damn thing go by them so quickly. But he was so powerful, and he just made himself a very, you know, obviously, I think the best player ever laced a pair of skates on. And he was above everybody else. He really was.
That's incredible. I mean, one of the things I did want to ask you was, you know, thinking back to when you played to seeing today's player, and the speed and what they can do out there. I mean, what do you see about what's happening now?
Well, you know, Wayne, when I watch the game today, the game is so fast. I mean, when I played, and I bet you 90% of our players played in the 60s, 50s, and 60s, we couldn't play in this game today. These players are so fast. I know the equipment is young, the equipment is lighter, the skates are lighter, the sticks lighter, everything, but the game, the emphasis is on speed today. And a lot of us didn't have speed. I mean, we compensated in other ways by being physical if we could catch somebody. But these players today, man, oh man, the way they move, they're going 25, 28 miles an hour, some of these guys. And it's wonderful to watch.
Well, who are some of your favorite players to watch today?
Well, McDavid, obviously. You know, I mean, my God, he's at another level, you know, as far as the way he skates and handles a puck and moves. And you know who represents him? Bobby Orr's agency represents him.
Oh, wow.
And I'll tell you how that happened. About 7 or 8 years ago, he was playing junior in Canada, in Ontario. And there was a guy, a scout, that went to visit him. And he had a meeting with him after the practice and said he'd like to represent him. And he worked for the Bob Orr agency. So he goes home and tells his dad what happened. And his dad said, "Did you say Bobby Orr's agency wants to represent you?" That's it. He's going to represent you. No ifs, ands, or buts. So that's how Orr became his agent. But he is the most exciting player in the league today. And I don't think you're going to find many. You know, there's a few other guys. Nathan MacKinnon from Colorado was very exciting too. But McDavid, man, oh man, oh man. His moves, everything is so quick. Everything is so quick. He's a pleasure to watch. I'm glad I never had to play against him because I don't think we'd ever catch him.
What do you think makes these players so fast today? I mean, you mentioned the tech, you know, maybe it's the technology, the new lighter skates, things like that. Yeah. But like, is there certain things that they're doing differently, training or?
Well, there has to be. I don't know what their training regimen is, but there has to be because of the foot speed. You've got to move your feet so quickly. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody move their feet as quick as McDavid. And how he accomplished that, I have no idea because I've never watched him practice. But when I watch him play, my God, he's exciting. You know, and Nathan MacKinnon is too. He is so quick. He's a big guy. I think he's bigger than McDavid. But it's just astonishing to see the way these guys move, and they're so quick, and their hands are so quick and stick handled and shoot the puck. I mean, the way these guys shoot the puck now, I'm glad I'm not a goalie. I'm glad I'm not a defenseman. Christ, I would be beat up so badly trying to block these shots. Oh, my goodness. But, I love watching the game. And last night, that game against Florida, the way the Flyers played, you know, Florida played 18 games, and they've only lost two games their last 18. And both times the Flyers beat them 2-1 in Florida. 2-1 in Florida. And, you know, I mean, I cannot believe the Flyers are the same team. They're not the same team as they were last year. I mean, we weren't a very good team last year, and they've changed some things around, and they got rid of four or five players that were with the team previously, and now they have these young kids that come in. And the Flyers have 9 guys 24 or under in the team. And, you know, they just made a big trade, and they got rid of a good right-handed defenseman who went to Colorado. And so they had to call up some young players from the farm team in Allentown, and they came in. They played very well last week, these two young kids. And, you know, I attribute a lot of the success to the coach, John Tortorello. Yeah, he's implemented a system, and these guys force the issue. And, you know, get excellent goaltending in Erickson. I know when Carter Hart left the team, I think a lot of people thought the Flyers were going to struggle, but they haven't. And our defense has played very, very well. They blocked a lot of shots. And our forwards are doing a tremendous job in forechecking and breaking plays up and so on and so forth. So they play as a 5-man unit out there, and the players play very well together. They're wonderful to watch.
Well, it's interesting you talked about the coach, and certainly that's something that we talk a lot about on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. It's about leadership, right? And right. Coaches and being leaders. So in your career, in your lifetime, I mean, I know you talk about, you know, some of the, your guiding principles, desire, discipline, dedication. And I mean, I'm sure these are like really important things that, you know, you hear from some of the best coaches. Who were some of the best coaches or mentors that you had over in your career?
Well, I was fortunate to, in 1963, I turned pro with the Boston organization. I went to Minneapolis, and there was a guy named Harry Sinden. Harry Sinden was a playing coach. And so I played, I was fortunate to play 2 years with him in Minneapolis. And then they moved the franchise to Oklahoma City in 65. And Harry just became my coach. But he was instrumental in a lot of things that I was fortunate to be able to do and learn from him. And of course, Freddie Shero. There's nobody like Freddie Shero. Freddie would say something to us, Wayne, and a month later we'd figured out that's how smart we were. But Freddie used these words like, you know, one of the greatest lines ever, win today, walk together forever. And that certainly holds true with our Broad Street Bullies team. We're still very close. In fact, when we had our game here, we had a game about a month ago in the building, and we had about 14 or 15 guys from our Stanley Cup team came back, and we had a good get together for 3 or 4 days. But Freddie Shero and Harry Sinden were two guys that were very instrumental in my success as a defenseman.
Were there certain things that they said to you, or certain things that helped motivate you, or was
no,
it?
No, you know what? You know, I really was. I don't need much for motivation. I'm a very motivated guy because I knew I wasn't as talented as a lot of the other players I played with. So I try to understand the game and how to play my position, but they you know, that they would come out and say things that made a lot of sense, and sometimes they didn't make sense, but sometimes a month later we would figure out what they really meant by that.
Right.
And I remember visiting Freddie Shero the day before he passed away, Wayne. He was at the Cooper Medical Center over in Jersey. And I was visiting, we were talking, and he was all skin and bone and everything else, but he got a little piece of paper out, and he tried a diagram of play. He had a pencil in his hand. He tried a diagram of play for me. And here he was dying. Next morning, he did pass on. But it goes to show you, Freddie went to Russia. After we won our first cup, Freddie went to Russia, and he learned the Russian system and everything else. And he came back and tried to implement it with us. But the Russians are such great conditioned athletes, and they trained 11 months of the year, where the North American athlete hockey player trains for about, you know, maybe 6 weeks prior to training camp, which was in September, where the Russians trained for 11 and a half months. And he tried to implement some of the things the Russians did, but that didn't work with us because we couldn't skate as quickly as them. We couldn't anticipate this and that and everything else. Freddie had more to do with me as far as being a successful athlete than anybody. And Harry Sinden was not far behind.
That's a wild story. I mean, it's really interesting how the players during your era and to be able to play against the Russians at the time, it was a completely different time.
Yeah. You know, Wayne, they were so skilled because they trained 11 and a half months a year, you know, and you know, it's funny. We went to Russia 5 years ago, our alumni team. I took our alumni team to Russia, and we played in a place called Kazan and St. Petersburg and Red Square in Moscow. And wherever we went, we would see people with Flyer jerseys on. It was amazing. And wherever we went, we sold out these games we played. Every game we played was sold out. We played in a place called Kazan, and the president of the country was a player. So went away, we go in a shootout. So I told our goaltender, if this gentleman comes in and takes a shot, you got to let him score, because if he scores, they're going to throw the biggest party we've ever had in Russia. And lo and behold, he scored. And you know what? After the game, he had this big party for us, and he had the vodka flowing freely and the beer and everything else. We had the caviar, we had everything. And the guy was so excited that he scored a goal, because he could hardly skate, the poor guy, but our goalie let him score, and that was it. So then we go to St. Petersburg, and there had 13,000 people there to watch us play, sold the building right out. And we saw so many people with Flyer jerseys. The unfortunate thing is I couldn't tell Mr. Snyder that when we were in Russia, we had people wearing Flyer jersey. He would have been so proud, because I took our alumni team to Europe 9 different times. Wherever we went, Wayne, we'd always see people wearing Flyer jerseys. It's incredible. The Flyers, an iconic name, they are. In fact, a friend of mine just came back from Prague here recently, and he gets in a cab in Prague, and the cabbie asked him where he's from, and he said Philadelphia, and the guy said home of the bullies. Imagine that in Prague, 7,000-8,000 miles away, home of the bullies, a Broad Street bully. Now this is, it's incredible how iconic the Broad Street bullies are.
It's absolutely amazing, and it's so great having you on our show. I mean, we have Joe Watson, the 2-time Stanley Cup champion from the Flyers and author of the new book, Thundermouth: Memoirs of a Broad Street Bully and NFL Lifer. And as we start to wind down this show, Joe, I mean, it's been great having you on the show. Love the stories. Share with me what the book tour has been like, and getting an opportunity to still tell these stories and meet with so many of your fans. I mean, how's it been going?
Well, Wayne, when I decided to do this book, I talked to Bobby Orr about it. He says, and he did the forward for me. And he says, Joe, watch, you're going to be very busy. I said, what do you mean? He says, you're going to be going to functions you'd never anticipated going to. And I said, you are, because you're going to have to go sign books and meet the public and everything else, which I really enjoy doing. And he was absolutely right. My God, I've been to all over the place. And we sold over 3,000 books here already, and we just got an order of 3,000 more. But I never anticipating going as far and wide and meeting people and getting an opportunity to talk about the book. The book is very popular. I've shipped books to Adelaide, Australia. I shipped them to Budapest, Hungary, all over the States and Canada. And I must say, I really enjoy it immensely. I met so many fine people. And the reason I met the fine people is because of the book. So I've had a lot of fun doing it. And thank God my wife has helped me. My wife is very good at doing this, because I don't know anything about a cell phone or a computer, but my wife's here to help me. And it's worked out very well for ourselves. We're a good team. My wife, Jamie, and I.
Well, Jamie's doing a great job. You're doing a great job. This is amazing. Everyone's got to go out there and get your book, Thundermouth: Memoirs of a Broad Street Bully and NFL Lifer. And Joe, thank you so much for joining us on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Yeah, Wayne, thanks very much for having me. If you're interested in the book, just joewatsonofficial.com and you'll get the book. I'll ship them out right away. And they're autographed and everything else. God, yes. Yeah, Wayne. But thank you very much for having me, Wayne. It's very considerate of you. And I look forward. I'd like to meet you one day. Maybe we'll get together one day.
Absolutely. Let's do it. I'd love to do that. And this has been a great episode. Really loved hearing your stories. I mean, the fact that everyone knows the bullies all around the world and you're one of them is really, really special. So thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. And we have to definitely hook up, Wayne. Okay.
Sounds great.
All right, my friend. Have a good one. Thanks for having me.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.